I went to Friendship School, was a member of the first class that completed the 8th grade in Friendship School. Graduated there in January 1913. Then went for one semester to high school in the Osceola School, which has now been torn down. Then for 3 years to Peabody High School. Graduated there in 1916. Went on to Princeton. Graduated there in 1920. And Harvard Law School. Graduated there in 1923.
What was it like in primary school when you were going to these various schools, being a young Jewish boy? Were there many Jewish classmates?
There were some Jewish classmates. I recall no problems that had to do with being Jewish.
You don't remember any incidents of discrimination?
None whatever.
How about in Peabody High School?
Peabody High School was also a very satisfactory experience. Dr. Simstein, who was the principal of Peabody, claimed that Peabody was the best preparatory school in Western Pennsylvania, and it must have been, because 6 members of my report room at Peabody High School were in my class at Princeton. 5 others and myself, and to place 6 students from one classroom in one college with competitive entrance examinations is something of a testimonial for the quality of the school.
And when you and your classmates from Peabody compared your preparation with those of other students from other public schools and private schools, how would you say it rated?
I would say it rated tops. I don't think that we could have had a better education anywhere else.
What was your major at Princeton?
History and politics. History and political science were one department in those days, and I majored in history and politics.
When did you make your decision and how to go to law school?
That decision had been made by my father before I ever went to college. He felt very strongly that I should go on to law school after college. I went through law school knowing while I was at law school that I would not be free to practice law, that the family business was ahead of me, and consequently I perhaps had less satisfaction in my law school work during the 3 years that I was at law school than I did with my work at college, but in retrospect, those 3 years were excellent mental discipline, and I have had no cause to regret those years.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the years you were growing up, did you often go off to your father's company to work?
No, never. I didn't go there to work until 30th of September 1923, when I was out of law school and was about to be admitted to the bar.
So the only time you went was for a visit, to look at the plant,
right,
kind of thing.
Oh, I visited there as a child when the present plant was first opened.
Mm-hmm. Was your father involved with, or your grandfather involved with the plant at its present location?
Well, both of them were.
Ah. The present location is in?
Newell or Hancock County, West Virginia.
Where had it been before that location?
East Liverpool, Ohio.
So it was during your grandfather's active time that the plant located in Newell?
That's right. My father had been much involved in it also, but my grandfather was still president of the company, did not retire until 1910.
Had the name of the company changed with the location?
No. The corporate organization changed from Ohio Corporation to a West Virginia Corporation, but the name was continued as the Homer Laughlin China Company. The business was named for the founder, a man named Homer Laughlin.
Do you know why they changed the location of that plant from East Liverpool to Newell?
One very good reason was the Ohio River, which tended to go on rampage every now and then and made it desirable to be on high ground away from the possibility of flooding. First Homer Laughlin plant in East Liverpool had been right down by the riverbank where the river moved in any time there was a flood. And the later plants in East Liverpool were on higher ground, but still not as well protected from the river and with less ground for expansion than was available in Newell. In fact, the town site had been developed first and then apparently it became obvious that a factory in the town would help to build the town in a way in which it would not grow if it were merely a suburb of East Liverpool. So essentially the better location and the higher ground above flood level were the two things that made Newell particularly attractive.
Do you remember hearing from your grandfather or your father about the other China companies that were in the same kind of business? Was there a lot of competition, is what I'm getting at.
There was definitely competition, and competition right there in the East Liverpool, Newell area. Other factories there, some of them still survive.
And why did so many of the China companies settle in that general area?
Because of the first plant that was built in East Liverpool used the native clay from the hills. Nobody uses that anymore, but East Liverpool became a skilled labor center. Since the production of China and earthenware requires skilled labor, it was very important to have a labor center. Also, in those days, natural gas was plentiful, and there was an ample supply of natural gas.
Why is the clay no longer taken from those hills?
With use of different type of clay to get a more satisfactory product.
So that it is not just your China company that doesn't take it from those hills, it's many of the China companies located in that area no longer use the supply of clay in that area.
Well, the local clay is used by some of the brickyards, but not for
China. Yeah. Can we go back now and talk about your home as you remember it as a child, the atmosphere of your home? Or the religious atmosphere, the economic atmosphere, the cultural atmosphere, what discipline was like in your home. Kind of give us a picture of what it was like for you growing up as a little boy.
I find it difficult to describe my home in simple terms. It was a home in which parents were devoted to their children, children were devoted to their parents.
The street you lived on in those days was?
Wendell Avenue.
The years that you were growing up on Winebiddle Avenue, was that a rather cohesive neighborhood, or was it more a neighborhood of a more general area?
I don't know what you mean by a cohesive neighborhood.
Was it closely knit in those surrounding streets, or did people not think of themselves as being a tightly knit neighborhood?
Well, there were people of various backgrounds in the neighborhood. It wasn't exclusively a Jewish neighborhood. It wasn't exclusively a Christian neighborhood. It was a neighborhood in which people lived side by side and were quite happy to live side by side. It happened that right next door was a cousin of my father. Second house up was my grandparents' home. Across the street were Jewish neighbors and Christian neighbors.
So it was really a multi-religious and multi-ethnic neighborhood?
Yes.
Was it multiracial? Were there any blacks in the immediate area?
Not in the immediate area. In those days, there was a much smaller proportion of black population in the city of Pittsburgh as a whole. There were blacks who attended township school, but most of them tended to, I won't say most of them, there were only a few. But they tended to live more toward East Liberty rather than toward out.
So there were blacks in Friendship School. Were there also blacks in Peabody?
Yes, but again, no large proportion.
In your graduating class at Peabody, were there any blacks who graduated with you that you would remember?
I would have to look through the Peabody magazine to answer the question.
Okay.
I assume that there must have been, but I can't really answer. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what cultural activities went on in your home? What did you do for recreation? You either with your parents or with others?
As far as cultural activity was concerned, we were very much encouraged to read and to read widely. My sister learned to play the piano. I was too busy with my studies ever to get to music, and never did.
Did you attend any concerts in the years you were growing up?
Eventually. But not too many before I went to college. And again, I was working on a tight schedule. I went through both grade school and high school on an accelerated program, and I was not encouraged to keep late hours, and most of my time went to study.
Well, you're throughout these many years, you're often seen at many of the fine musical activities of the community. Would you say that your love of music was a fairly lately acquired interest, or would you say it would date back to your earlier years?
Well, as soon as I went to college, I started going to the concerts that were given at college. I think that interest has continued, but I have no technical knowledge of music.
But appreciation can date back to your college years.
chiefly, although I remember one or two concerts that I attended. Mother and father went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Mother was much interested in music. Father respected music, but had no ear for it.
Did either sports or the outdoors have any place in your life or your early home?
Yes, as a youngster, I worked diligently at playing golf. Also, I learned to play tennis. I had enjoyed outdoor exercise all through the years. As youngsters, we also used to play so-called baseball in the backyard and a formal baseball, but playing at it with a baseball.
Who taught you to play tennis?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that we had a governess in those days and knew something about tennis, but whether she did or didn't, I don't really know.
Can you give a guess how old you were when a tennis racket was first put in your hand and you kind of liked it and bounced the ball around?
Well, probably 9 years of age, somewhere along the
that, yeah.
I definitely remember playing one summer that had to be somewhere 9 or 10 year old age.
Did your sister take to sports?
Yes, she was an enthusiastic golfer, and she also played tennis.
Were either of your parents active in sports?
Mother played golf, I think, before father ever played it. And she did not continue with it, but father did, and he enjoyed it for many years.
Did you ever go traveling with your family?
All the traveling that we did as youngsters was with our family, and we did travel both in this country and in Europe.
Can you tell us about some of the places you visited and about how old you were at that time?
Well, I can't tell you from memory, but I know as a fact that I was less than a year old when I first went to the White Mountains in New Hampshire. And the love of mountains has continued ever since.
So when your parents went away, they did not leave you and your sister home. They took you along.
Normally, yes. Mm-hmm. On summer vacations, always. And occasionally wait for a few days or a week somewhere. But, normally, it was a question of family vacations.
Did you return to the White Mountains frequently as a youngster?
No, I have not been to the White Mountains since 1907. That was the last time.
But there was more than one trip to the White Mountains.
Every summer from 1901 to 1907, except the summer preceding my sister's birth, when I did not.
After 1907, where did your family go for vacations with you?
1908 to 1914, with the exception of the year 1909, we were in Europe. And 1909, we were seashore and then in eastern Canada, in St. Lawrence.
Now, when you would go away on these trips, how long would you be away on the average?
Difficult to say. I would say on the average probably 2 months, most of the summer vacations.
Would any...
And sometimes longer.
As young children, did your parents take along any help, any household help? Or childcare help?
Yes, until my sister and I rebelled and said we wanted no more supervision of that sort.
Could you tell us where in Europe you and your family went for vacation?
Went to Germany, to Austria, what was then Austria is now Czechoslovakia. Went to Switzerland, and there the high mountains of Switzerland succeeded the White Mountains in our affection, and nothing less than the Alps or their equivalent on this side of the water has satisfied us since then.
Do you happen to remember which cities that you, or one or two of them, that you visited in Switzerland?
We didn't spend much time in the cities. We visited, of course, in Zurich and Geneva, Bern, other urban centers, but we spent most of our time at St. Moritz in the Engadine, in the high country.
Did you ski while you were there?
No, we were there in the summer, and we walked.
Just you and your sister hiked, or your parents hiked also?
My parents also, particularly my father, loved it, and he had the endurance required for long hikes.
How did you get back and forth to Europe in those days?
By ship.
Was it usually the same ship line that you took?
Sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. We traveled on the North German line, on the Hamburg American line, on the Cunard.
As a young person going back and forth to Europe on board ship, did you look forward to these voyages?
We enjoyed them tremendously, except when the ocean was too rough, and that fortunately didn't happen to us too often.
Were there other children on board for you to play with if you wanted to?
Yes.
Did, when your family took these trips to Europe, were there either other friends or relatives that happened to be in the general area at the same time?
Well, sometimes there were, sometimes there weren't. My grandfather, Aaron, accompanied us on our trip in 1914. My grandmother died in 1913. He was with us that summer. My grandfather Hamburger had a brother living in Germany to whom we were much devoted. We visited him at one time in Braunschweig. And my wife and I subsequently visited him when we were on our wedding trip. There were some family associations in that.
Now, during these years that you were going to Europe, were you ever aware of any of the political activity of developments in Europe?
We were in Europe the summer of 1914, and I was as much aware as I could have been at any subsequent age of what was going on that summer. We followed the news with rapt attention and increasing horror. We traveled back from Switzerland through France at the time that the German invasion was about to reach France and come through Belgium at that time, and as we came through the town of Amiens, the first trainload of British wounded were brought back. Similarly, the world of horror that started in 1914 was very much part of my own life experience.
Were there any relatives that your father tried to influence, any relatives still in Europe that your father tried to influence that they should come to America during that time of trouble?
I don't think there was any family migration at that time. His great uncle, Braunschweig, had two sons, two wonderful young men. One an artist, the other one serving his apprenticeship in business in Hamburg. And they were so disappointed that they had, one of them had been rejected for military service, and that they weren't going to be able to have their period of military service together. This was before the First World War that we got this report from their parents. They both went into service in the German forces, and both of them were killed within the first year of the war and the second month, about a month after the first year of the war. Their dream of military service ended most tragically. And for a country that subsequently made life impossible for the rest of the family who were there.
I wonder if we can talk now about the religious atmosphere of your home. While you were attending Friendship School and Peabody School, what kind of religious education were you and your sister getting?
We attended religious school at Rode Shulman. Once the temple was located on Fifth Avenue, where it wasn't a major journey to get there.
Was your father still teaching at the temple when you attended religious school?
No. He had taught during his earlier years, at the time that my mother was growing up, a few years thereafter.
So he had long since quit teaching?
He had quit teaching, yes.
At the time when you were going through the religious school at Rode Shulman, who was the rabbi?
Dr. J. Leonard Levy.
What was your impression of Dr. Levy as you were growing up?
My impression of Dr. Levy is that he is, was the most wonderful teacher I ever had.
As you were growing up, was the congregation of Rode Shulman increasing in size, or did it stay about the same?
In general, it was increasing. The congregation was quite small when Dr. Levy came to Pittsburgh, and at the time of his death in 1917, my recollection is that it had something like 750 members and an additional number of seat holders, people who were affiliated with the congregation but were not active members of the congregation. Later on, with the adoption of the unassigned pew system after Dr. Levy's death, the congregation expanded very considerably in membership. Class of seat holders was abolished.
I see. When Dr. Levy was alive, every person had an assigned seat.
At the time that the temple on 8th Street, that temple on 8th Street was abandoned and the new temple was established on 5th Avenue, was a report which I still have, which Father wrote, urging the adoption of an unassigned pew system, but realizing that that was ahead of the time the old pew system was continued.